morning, everybody. So let me continue our discussion of homogeneous universe. So we have seen last time that the homogeneity and isotropy on the spatial slice, which is the observation we have for our universe, actually constrain the geometry to have this very, very simple form where this Gij here is just a homogeneous and isotropic maximally symmetric space of the Euclidean signature. And so basically we have only three possibilities for that. We have k equal to plus minus 1 or 0 for the sphere, for the plane, or for the hyperboloid. However, this spatial part of the metric can arbitrarily stretch in time, and that's why we have this scale factor here. So now these coordinates, as stated here, are precisely adapted to this homogeneous and isotropic preferred observers. So frame here is adapted to special observers, which are the commoving observers. Which are those observers who see homogeneity and isotropy. Are there any questions to this? Okay. So starting with this metric, we started discussing basically geodesic trajectories in the space-time. And so we realized that, for example, the light, as it propagates throughout our universe, actually gets redshifted, and that's called cosmological redshift. And so basically, the wavelength is proportional to this scale factor A here, or the frequency gets redshifted as 1 over A. We have also seen that the motion of galaxies, or motion of anything heavy, is sort of done by a Hubble drag. So in the end, everything is sort of commoving if you wait long enough time. So if you had at the very beginning some random motion, this random motion, which is described by the specular velocity, is decreasing as the universe is expanding. So motion of light, we have seen that omega is proportional to 1 over A, which is cosmologic redshift. As the motion of galaxies so there's this Hubble drag. That means that all the galaxies are basically expanding with the universe, if you want. The distance between them is getting larger and larger, proportional to the scale factor A. And the peculiar velocity is decreasing. So the random motions of these galaxies are more and more negligible, and they decrease like 1 over A. Okay. We also discussed other coordinate systems for this metric, and some of them are useful, and most of them are used. So first, you can introduce the spherical coordinates, and then the metric just takes this form, A squared T, and then dr squared, 1 minus kr squared, r squared e omega square. And then we talked about introducing another coordinate. Instead of r coordinate, you can use chi coordinate. And to make this part of the metric very, very simple, basically d chi square. And of course, the price you have to pay for that is that this r square now becomes more complicated. And you can think about it like, in some sense, the area gauge for the Schwarzschild metric or whatever. So if you start with describing general spherical symmetric spacetime, you would have minus fdt square, and then we have dr square over g, some function, and plus r square d omega square. So now you can always set this g equal to f, but the price you have to pay is that you change the radial coordinate, and so you can shift that unpleasant function g into the radial part. So you can always write a spherical symmetric spacetime like minus fdt square plus dr square over f and plus some function g d omega square. OK? Okay. So the same thing we are basically doing here. We are shifting this unpleasant thing into here. And so you have S chi square d omega square, where this SK is either chi or sine h chi. Okay. So this is very useful, especially if you introduce, and I didn't yesterday, so let me introduce it today, conformal time. Eta. And it's simply given by A dt. So dt is equal to A d eta. This is our original time. This is our conformal time. Of course, it follows that eta minus eta 0 is an integral t 0 dt over A of t. And so the reason why you introduce that is that then your metric becomes even simpler than before. So the metric now becomes ds square, and you can actually factorize the scale factor in front of everything. So you have a square t or a square eta if you want, and then it's just minus d eta square plus d chi square plus sk square d omega square. So this is also a very often used metric to describe FRW spacetime. So in particular, notice that if I have k equal to 0 specifically, then of course this is just chi square d omega square. So what stands in the bracket is just the Minkowski space written in spherical coordinate. Okay. So then you see that the only difference with respect to the Minkowski space is that overall factor a square standing in front of your metric, which is a conformal factor standing here. So you have something like stretched Minkowski space. Okay. This is stretched Minkowski. Okay, so now let me use this form of the metric to talk about something interesting, which is called horizons. So we discuss now horizons. And so if you want to discuss causality structure and stuff like that, you always discuss photons. But in our case, you will discuss radio photons. So consider radial photons. And so for radial photons, of course, d omega square is equal to 0. And ds square on the left-hand side is also equal to 0. So we have that d eta is plus minus d chi. Okay, so in other words, in these coordinates, in coordinates eta and chi, the radial photons travel in your diagram in 45 degrees. Okay, so that's very pleasant property. So now, to be very, very concrete, I will use a specific example of what's happening with the universe for various components of the matter, and I will justify that in the second half of this lecture. So just wait for that, but I'll just use this. So it is an observational fact that universe is expanding, meaning that a dot is bigger than 0. The universe is expanding. Now, the range of the coordinates, of course, I can choose from 0 to infinity for my time coordinate t. But surprisingly, that will have some interesting range for my conformal time eta, as we will see. Okay. And so then you model For various matter components, you can show that, and you have seen that in your tutorial, for a specific example of non-relativistic matter, that the scale factor is proportional to time to some power. So if you have just non-relativistic matter in Newtonian cosmology, you have seen that this is T2/2 or something like that. Okay, so more generally, you can say that this is something like A0, and then T over T0, and to some power P. Okay, so now, of course, I don't care about these A0 and T0 constants. But the observation is that for all the matter, this is actually the P is positive, a positive power here. Okay, so what is the consequence of this? So just assume this for a moment, and I'll, as I said, I will show this later on today and maybe tomorrow, but hopefully today. So if we assume that, then we have two equations. So first of all, you can calculate what A double dot is. And so if I differentiate my equation A is T^p 2 times, I'm getting something like P times P minus 1 T^p 2. Okay, Miracle's equation. Second equation is that your conformal time, which is dt over a, by definition, so this is proportional to t^-p dt. Okay, and that's t^(1-p). Okay, so very, very simple equations, as you see, very powerful equations. Okay. So now, basically, you can start drawing a picture what happens when your universe is accelerating and decelerating. So what I mean by that is the universe is always expanding. But the question is whether the rate of expansion is getting faster or slower. So the decelerating universe, is characterized by A double dot is smaller than 0, and accelerating will be bigger than 0. Okay. So these are the two possibilities. So let me first consider the decelerating one. So if you look at this equation here, then the only way how I can get that A double dot is negative is that if P is smaller than 1. Okay? So that's the only part which is actually which can be negative here. So 0 is smaller than P is smaller than 1. That's the constraint I'm getting for my power P. Okay? And then if P is in between 0 and 1, then this guy is some positive, this is some positive number here. So P goes from 0 to infinity, so eta will go from 0 to infinity as well. Okay. So eta belongs 0 to infinity as well. Okay. So now we can start plotting the diagram, what is happening with our universe as we evolve in this conformal time eta. Okay, so there will be a diagram here. And there will be my conformal time eta. And we know that this eta goes from 0. So at 0 eta, there was this big bang. Okay. And the other axis will be my radial coordinate chi. So there was some origin eta equal to 0, which we can call big bang. And then let's say we are somewhere here in this eta, so eta us. And then it's obvious that if you start plotting the light cones, the radial, how the radial photons propagate, they propagate 45 degrees because of that relation there. So I have exactly 45 degree light cone here. So this is us. We are always at chi equal to zero. Why not? But you see that it's not possible for anything to actually. So if there's some chi Big Bang here, and I cannot, you know, anything which was further away than chi Big Bang, if it was here, for example, it can never reach us. So this is called past particle horizon. So we cannot see beyond chi bigger than chi Big Bang.
I mean, we would see it in the future, right?
Or yes, this very good. Thank you for that question. This is for a given instant of time. Of course, later on, we will see more of the universe. But at a given instant of time, we can only see whatever happened here, but we cannot see past that. Okay, so cannot see chi bigger than Big Bang, and so there's a past particle horizon. So the past particle horizon occurs exactly when chi is equal to chi Big Bang. Okay, so very simple, right? Very simple. Okay, so now this is in the case when the universe was decelerating all the time. Now let's consider the other one. So if it's accelerating, A double dot is positive, which means that P is bigger than 1. So P is bigger than 1 here. But if P is bigger than 1, and you look at this equation, then this is like 1 over t to some power. Okay. And there would be a minus sign in front of that, actually. So what you can show is that in this case, actually, eta doesn't go from 0 to infinity, but rather it goes from minus infinity to 0. Okay. Minus infinity to 0, coming from that equation. Okay. So that means that actually in this picture, the Big Bang is sort of postponed till eta equals to minus infinity. But we will have eventually a big crunch at eta equal to 0, or the end of the universe will be at eta equal to 0. This is my eta. This is eta equal to 0, and that's, you know, the end line. So this is my chi again. So again, if we are at some eta here, so we are, let's say, here, eta us, or let's say again we are at chi equal to 0, and let's be more. So now it's obvious that we can only influence what lies within this light cone to the future. Okay, so we cannot influence anything that happens here after that. So let's say our civilization was born at this time. So if there is somebody, you know, sitting at this chi, he will never know. Okay, because we cannot simply, you know, let them know. And of course, as you know, as time progresses, we can influence less and less. Okay, so yeah, so these guys will never know. So if there is some UFO here, okay, so they will never know that our civilization existed if it was created in this era. Of course, if you go in the past, yes, we would know, but yeah. So we were, you know, we started sending signals that we exist, let's say, in this era. And then it's too late, right? So we will never let these guys know. So this thing is called chi infinity, and it's called future horizon. Future horizon. So this is all very simple, isn't it? So questions? All very simple. So now here comes a very interesting puzzle, which was a puzzle in, you know, middle of last century and 70s and whatever. So they say it's called Horizon Puzzle. And so, let's say back in 70s, people could measure very well what is the density of matter and what is the density of radiation in our universe. So they could measure rho m, and they measured how much radiation and how much matter is in our universe. And then solving the Einstein equations, which I will write down in a minute, you could show that this means that the universe must be accelerating. Okay, so they didn't know anything about dark energy or dark matter. They just knew the normal matter and the radiation. And then if only these two guys are present, then you can show that the energy density is much, much smaller than the critical energy density, and the universe actually is decelerating. And of course, it's decelerating now, but these are the only components of the matter which we have, and this must be decelerating all time. Okay. So then, of course, this picture applies, but we have the following puzzle. So we observe the universe there, and we observe the universe there, and it looks exactly the same. It is isotropic. So it looks, if you're looking that way, looks exactly the same as if you're looking that way. And this is also true for the cosmic microwave background, which is coming to you. Okay, so the radiation comes that way is the same as the radiation comes that way. So now what it means in your picture, but this radiation was released relatively early in the universe. In particular, this is the picture we have. Eta, this is our chi. This is the Big Bang. Okay, and let's say the radiation was released here. We will talk about it later next week. So eta CMB released. Okay, and then this is eta us. So we observe this type of picture here. So now looking that direction corresponds to the photons coming from here. Looking that direction corresponds to the photons coming from here. Okay. So now these photons seems like they have exactly the same temperature. They are all isotropic. So it seems that the only way how actually they could get the same temperature is that actually there was something which was in equilibrium a long time ago. When the CMB was released, they had to be in equilibrium. Okay, you had to have a plasma in equilibrium exactly at that temperature. Then the CMB is released, and the photons, you know, just travel to you. They get redshifted because of the cosmological redshift, and that's why you see the temperature you see today. But now, if you see, look at the past light cone of when these photons were actually released, is this guy here. And when these photons were released, is this guy here. So now you see that these photons could never communicate with those photons. There was no way these two things were in causal contact. Okay, so could not. So the big puzzle is why physics correlated in here and in here. And because we only observe fluctuations in CMB which are like 10 to minus 5, the physics actually here had to be correlated with this one here, the 10 to minus 5, one in 10 to minus 5, which is, of course, is a big puzzle, right? So why something you create here and something you create there, and if there is no prior communication, why they are the same thing, okay? And this is called the horizon puzzle. And so it bothered people a lot. And it was basically the origin of inflation theory. So this puzzle gave rise to inflation theory.
But any other state would be as possible. Any other possible state of the early universe, like at 10 to the minus 5, would be as possible as that. It's weird that they are at the same temperature, but why wouldn't they be at the same temperature?
I see. Yeah. That's a good point. We will discuss that.
Okay.
So in some sense, the inflation doesn't really solve the problem, and I agree. but yeah, it really led to this idea of inflation, you're right. So there are still some problems with inflation, and we will talk about them next week. But basically, you know, the inflation really tried to say why they could be correlated at the very beginning. So that was that's the explanation offered by inflation, and you will discuss it in your tutorial tomorrow. So you will discover it for yourself that really, if you postulate inflation, then these two actually could communicate in the past. So now the question is, what are, if you look at the sky, so how far you have to look so that actually the two things can be correlated, if this is true. And the size is actually of the size of the moon. So if you're already looking at the distances which are bigger than size of the moon, they couldn't be correlated because it would be something like this, for example. So if you are looking at a azimuthal thing which is bigger than that of the moon, they couldn't be correlated. Okay. But anyway, so you'll discuss that tomorrow. Questions? If no, let's do new thing, which is dynamics. So far, I was just pretending that we know how A behaves in our FRW, and I told you that A is actually governed by the presence of the matter present in our universe. So let's now do it here. So now, we still want to have, and we do have, if you consider matter distribution coarse-grained, then it's homogeneous and isotropic. So now the question is, which energy momentum tensor is consistent with homogeneity and isotropic? And you can show, and the proof is in Baumann's lectures if you are interested, that the most general T-mu, which is consistent with homogeneity and isotropy, is that of the perfect fluid. Okay, so most general T mu nu consistent with homogeneity and isotropy can be written in terms of the perfect fluid energy momentum tensor. And I remind you that this is T mu nu P G mu nu plus rho plus P U mu U nu, where U mu is the four velocity of the fluid. In our case, it will because the fluid is the content of our universe is precisely the four velocity of the commoving observers. Okay, and those commoving observers will see energy density rho, and we will see around themselves the pressure P. Okay, so this is the T mu nu for the perfect fluid. So now, interestingly, you can recast in this form many other energy momentum tensors. So, for example, if you have some special scalar field, you can also write it in this form. And so we will do it later again. So to describe the inflation period or whatever. So it doesn't exclude the existence of, for example, scalar field. It can be also written in this form here. And then it was your homework one in gravitational physics to actually derive the curvature for FRW spacetime. And so let me just write it down. So now we impose the Einstein equations. And then with this energy momentum tensor, and you are getting two equations out of that, which are independent, and are called Friedmann equations. Friedmann equations. And these are probably two equations you should remember, because they are, first, easy, and second, very, very important. So h squared, which is a dot over a squared, is equal to 8 pi g newton over 3 rho minus k over a squared. So that's the first. And then the second one is rho dot is minus 3h rho plus p. So you get, out of the Einstein equations, you get just two independent equations, and they are written like that. So now if you go back to your tutorial on Newtonian cosmology, you will realize that you had exactly the same equation. The first equation is exactly the same. So you had that. And the second equation is slightly modified, but the only modification with respect to Newtonian cosmology is presence of this p here. So in some sense, p also contributes to the energy density in the relativistic case, but not in the non-relativistic one. So this is the only difference to the equation which you have seen in your tutorial. OK, so these are two equations. Again, what you have done in your tutorial is that you could introduce a critical density, which happens for k equals 0. So you say that a rho critical is just 3 h squared over 8 pi g newton. And so what you discovered in your tutorial, that although this is called critical density, it's not actually a constant, but it depends on time. Because h depends on time, this also depends on time. And so plugging it back into the first equation for any time, you can just write that equation as k over a square, as you have done in your tutorial, g newton 3, and then rho minus rho critical. So then, at any instant of time, if I measure that the density around me is bigger or smaller than rho critical, it tells me the sign of k. Okay. So for example, if you have rho bigger than rho critical, then it's obviously positive, and k must be plus 1. So we live in a closed universe. Okay. So now, this is all very nice. And in principle, all three possibilities are possible, k equal to plus minus 1 or 0. But here comes the observation. So we observe rho equal to rho critical 1 plus minus 0.01. So in fact, it seems that we are very, very close to the flat universe. And the explanation for this, well, this is another puzzle, which was called flatness puzzle. And again, was a motivation for the inflation theory. So why do we live in the flat universe? And although this may not seem to you as a puzzle, actually, you can show that if this is, so this is of course the case now, okay? So, but you can show, and we'll show that in next week, then if this is true now, then if you go, you know, back to the history, then it would have to be much, much closer to 1 in the history. So when the universe was 1,000 times smaller, actually, this number is getting smaller and smaller. So you would have to actually precisely very, very tune at the very beginning that really we have rho equal to rho critical. Okay, and then the question is, why is that the case? And again, inflation offers an explanation, as we will see next.
Can we take into account dark matter?
This includes everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now we have two equations. Let's solve at least one of them. So cosmic inventory. So now the question is, what type of matter really fills our universe? So what is the matter component, the matter content of our universe? But in order to solve these equations, so notice, so we have, what are the unknowns in this equation? So, well, k is something fixed, so we don't have to care about that. But certainly, a is unknown here. Okay, but also, if you want, I want to solve for a, provided that I specify what rho is. So rho is another unknown. And of course, p is also another unknown in some sense. So you are getting two equations for three unknowns. But of course, you cannot solve that. So what you need to provide, in addition to that, is you need to provide an equation of state, which is another equation which completes your system. Okay, so to solve Friedman equations need to specify equation of state, which is how the pressure depends on your matter density. Okay, so now if I complete the system with this last equation, then I have three equations for three unknowns, basically. Okay. So now, surprisingly, for many components of the matter in our universe, this equation of state is very, very simple. In fact, it's given, so for many components, many matter components, this is extremely simple, and it's given by, if I take p over rho, the fraction p over rho, I get something which is called w, and it's constant. So this of course comes from other physics. It comes from electromagnetic theory. It comes from other nuclear theory or whatever. So it turns that p over rho is a constant. And if p over rho is a constant, actually, the second Friedman equation is a joke, right? So I can just plug it there. So you'll have that rho dot. So rho dot is equal to minus 3h. And now I put rho out. I have 1. And then I have p over rho, which is w. OK. But I know that h is a dot over a. So you are getting basically equation rho dot over rho is a dot over a, and there is some constant in front of it. So from here, rho dot over rho is minus 3, 1 plus w, and then a dot over a. Or rho is just a minus 3, 1 plus w. So if w is a constant, you can immediately integrate one of these equations. And you get this beautiful relation that the density and the scale factor are related by this simple relation here. Okay. So now, to really tell you the truth, that I told you that the w is constant. So let us look at typical components of the matter in our universe and see that really, indeed, this is the case. So inventory, so matter components. Make a table, component and then equation of state, which means what is W, and then what is the corresponding density, okay? Okay, so in your tutorial, you have discussed the matter, non-relativistic matter. What is meant by matter in cosmology is basically anything that is non-relativistic. So you talk about yourself, you talk about stars, you talk about galaxies. That is all matter, which is, you know, called a non-relativistic. For example, galaxies, equation of state. So for example, galaxy. So now the equation of state is, so if you consider yourself, the question is, how much pressure is inside you? Okay, and then remember that you are in relativistic units.
But before or after PSI? After PSI.
Thank you for that question. Okay, so maybe you are becoming more and more relativistic as and the pressure increases. But typically, you know, in relativistic units, the pressure is equal to zero for any matter. So you can think about it like a dust or whatever. You can think about yourself as dust, because, yeah. Okay, so W is, of course, equal to zero. And then if you plug it into this equation, so W is equal to zero, then you see that the density dilutes as 1 over a cubed. So rho goes like 1 over a cubed. Okay, then you can have radiation. For example, photons, or CMB, or whatever. So now, from electromagnetic theory, you know that the pressure is actually 1/3 of the density. Okay, so you have probably derived that in your electromagnetic course. So P is 1/3 of rho, which means W is 1/3. And if you plug 1/3 there, you find that rho goes like 1 over a to the 4. Okay. Then we also have the cosmological constant lambda in our universe. And you will see in a minute that has equation of state P is equal to minus rho. It's a very, very strange equation of state. If rho is positive, well, yeah, so here lambda can be plus minus, but in our universe, lambda is actually positive. So anyway, so this W is minus 1, and if I plug minus 1 here, you see that rho actually doesn't dilute as the universe expands. So actually rho is constant here, which is something very, very strange, right? And so something which is completely contradicts your Newtonian intuition, because you would say naively, well, I have to have energy conserved, right? But if my universe is expanding, that means that in order to conserve my energy, I would have to actually decrease the density, okay? But of course, here you are expanding the universe, but the density remains constant. That's very, very peculiar behavior of cosmological constant. But in relativity, the conservation of energy is sort of captured by your nabla mu t mu nu equals to zero law, and it doesn't contradict that. So it contradicts your standard intuition of conservation of energy, but it's consistent. Okay. Finally, you can also formally include the curvature into your matter content. So if you look at here, you have h squared equals to something proportional to rho, and then minus k over a square. So in principle, you can say that minus k over a square is something like energy density of the curvature. So then you have the energy density goes like 1 over a square. So rho here goes like 1 over a square. And so to recover that, you'll find that this is minus 1/3. So P is minus 1/3 rho. And that's the curvature. Sometimes people do that. Yeah. But anyway, we will see that k is equal to 0, so it doesn't really contribute. Well, we know that k is basically equal to 0. Anyway, so these are the typical components, where, you know, which basically describe any matter content in your universe.
I have a question about temperature, because this relation between p and rho, it looks like an ideal gas law, which would involve temperature also. We have this very cold matter, where it doesn't matter, and the radiation, which is very hot, so it doesn't matter. What about the intermediate regime?
What about the intermediate regime between relativistic and non-relativistic? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, very good. So here I'm presenting always these limiting cases in some sense. But of course, what happens in the universe is that some particles are at some point relativistic, and then after some time, they become non-relativistic. And so there's a transition period where where this is not so simple as I'm writing here. Okay, and so people do some approximations, and of course this will be more complicated. But I just deal with these limiting cases. And what actually turns out is that you can sort of divide the history of the universe into various epochs, where always one matter component is dominating. Okay, so until recently it was the matter which was dominating. So if you look at this thing here, so you would see that when A is very, very small, actually, this is the biggest contribution to the energy density. So actually, you would expect that at the early universe is the radiation, which is the most important thing. And then later on, this guy will be dominant. And later on, this guy will be dominant. And later on, this guy will be dominant. So it turns out that this guy doesn't really exist. And we are now in sort of matter slash cosmological constant dominated universe. But you're right. So there's a transition period which we don't really capture here, and it would be much more complicated. But I'm just, you know, you can really divide it into these epochs, and you don't make much mistake. Okay. History of universe can be divided into corresponding epochs. Where, you know, one component here dominates. Okay, so let me make one remark on a cosmological constant. So people who don't do cosmology typically put lambda, the cosmological constant, on the left-hand side of the Einstein equation because they claim it's part of the geometry. People who do cosmology sometimes put it on the right-hand side of the Einstein equation, and they interpret it as a matter contribution. Okay, so that's very, very simple observation that you can put it on both sides. So remark on cosmological constant. So if I write it like that, so you have g mu nu plus lambda g mu nu equals to 8 pi t mu nu. So that's the standard equation as you are used to it. But now you can put this guy here on the right-hand side and interpret that as the corresponding t mu nu, which means that t mu nu of lambda is, what is it? It's minus lambda g mu nu over 8 pi. Okay, so you can introduce the corresponding energy momentum tensor. So what is important here, that this is, you know, it has the form rho lambda, minus rho lambda, minus rho lambda g mu nu. So in some sense, it has the form of, again, perfect fluid, but now with zero pressure. Well, sorry, with the pressure which is equal to rho. I'm sorry for that. So pressure is equal to rho minus that. So this is the form of t mu nu. So rho lambda equals to p lambda minus sine equals to lambda over 8 pi. And this is precisely the equation of state I have written there. So W is minus 1 for cosmological constant. So now, of course, for Einstein gravity, which is completely classical theory, lambda is, you know, something, some constant which is present in your solution or which is present in your theory. And so many physicists actually say, well, so what? So our universe is described by the theory which in addition needs a cosmological constant. And in order to fit the observation, I just tune this cosmological constant to be of some value. Okay, and there's no problem whatsoever. And that's usually the approach of quantum gravity people. They say, well, I just need for my description a cosmological constant in order to fit the observation. On the other hand, people who do particle physics, of course, they would like to explain where this lambda comes from. And so one contribution to lambda is due to the vacuum fluctuations of your quantum fields. Okay, so vacuum fluctuations should contribute to lambda. Contribute the value of lambda. In fact, of course, what would particle physicists like is that really they give you precisely the value of lambda which you observe. Right? So that's really I can explain the presence of this mysterious cosmological constant as simply, you know, the fact that my quantum fields fluctuate and there's some zero energy to them. So now, what is shown in Weinberg, but it's very, very simple to argue that it must be so, is that these vacuum fluctuations have precisely the same form as this thing here. So it's rho. Why is it minus? Did I screw the sign here? I have t mu nu lambda is minus lambda g mu nu over 8 pi. And then I'm saying rho is positive. Interesting. Maybe, anyway. So it can be argued from, you know, UFT that the vacuum fluctuations, the corresponding stress energy tensor, has the form which is the energy density of these vacuum fluctuations times g mu nu. Okay? Now this minus sign bothers me, but anyway. So it seems that it has precisely the form which we want for our lambda. Okay, so it has the same form. But there's a small problem here. And the problem is that if you take what is the prediction of quantum field theory and what is actually the observation of lambda, then you don't find one, but you find something insane. Okay, so there's a teeny tiny not agreement between the prediction of quantum field theory and actually what is really observed. And this is called old cosmological problem. Old means that there are some new problems as well, but it doesn't mean that it has been solved. Actually, nobody knows what's going on here. And really, you know, the vacuum fluctuations have to contribute to lambda. There's no way they wouldn't. But the question is, what compensates them or why they are so small when the typical predictions using quantum field theory give you something which is that insanely bigger than what is observed? Okay. So this is if you can solve this problem, it's yeah. Question. Yeah.
Is that ratio the same as the Hubble length of the Planck length?
I don't know. Calculate it. I'm not sure.
What is the question?
I don't think that there is anything in physics you could actually have such an insane ratio. Maybe. So do you have any theory why this is 120?
Well, how do you get exactly the magnitude of the vacuum?
Well, open Weinberg and you'll see.
It depends on the cutoff scale, right?
Sorry, the which
the
one?
Vacuum. The
vacuum. Does it? Why would it depend on Hubble scale?
A cutoff scale, sorry.
Oh, right, yes. Yes, okay. Of course.
So that you take would be the Planck scale.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the lambdas link to the Hubble scale. That's what I was thinking.
Maybe you're right. Let's discuss later. Yeah. Other question? Okay, so I want to conclude this two-minute calculation. So we solved the second Friedmann's equation by postulating that these components behave like the equation of state is just a constant. And we derived this wonderful formula between the density and the scale factor here. So now let me do it one more from a different physical point of view. So physical derivation, if you want. Of A as a function of rho. And so basically you take part of your universe here, which has some volume dV, and you have some pressure and energy inside, and then you let your universe to expand. And so this thing is governed by the first law of thermodynamics, so dQ minus pdV. Okay, but you know that as you expand your universe, there is no really a neat flux of heat through your boundary, because I'm just taking any piece of the universe, and if there was a heat flux, then I would be heating some part of the universe more than the other parts. Okay, so there cannot be any heat flux, so no net heat flux, which means dQ has to be equal to zero. So now my energy inside is simply rho, which is the density, times the V. So I have d rho V equals to minus pdV. And then I'm using this equation of state, which I have to use, which is minus dW rho dV. And this has two terms, d rho and v plus rho dV. Okay. So now you can collect the terms dV together, and you can collect the terms d rho together, and rearrange the equation. And so you get that d rho over rho is minus 1 plus w dV over v. Okay. Which means that rho is proportional to v minus 1 plus w. But of course, the volume of the universe is proportional to a cube, so which is a minus 3 1 plus w, which is the same result as we had before. Okay, so this is just a different derivation, which especially the old-fashioned cosmologists would like this thing here. It's a very, very physical derivation of what's happening with this density based on thermodynamics in the expanding universe. Okay, so let me stop here, and let me continue tomorrow with this thing, and we'll probably start also thermodynamics in the expanding universe. Questions? Okay, we should discuss that thing there.